Once again, you're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm your host, William Cooper. Are you one of the people who believe that everything that's happened through history is an accident? Well, listen to this, folks, and listen very carefully. Those desiring substantial evidence of the unfoldment of the Great Plan should follow the suggestion inscribed upon the monument to Christopher Wren in St. Paul's Cathedral and gaze about them. The rapid advancement in the social and political states of man, the increasing richness of human living, and the broadening vision toward individual and collective responsibility herald with auroral colors the rising of the Sun of Truth. There is much yet to be accomplished, but already the achievement is impressive. Even the most devout humanist cannot survey the orderly progress of the race and at the same time deny the existence of a well-integrated program. The light of the ancient Vedas is slowly but surely illuminating the whole world. The vision of man's noble destiny and the sacred sciences which made possible the realization of that vision have been guarded and served by the silent ones of the earth, the priesthoods of the sacerdotal colleges, the hierophants of the mystery schools, and the adept masters of the secret societies have been the guardians of man's noblest purpose, the perfection of his own kind. Vast organizations, industrial, political, social, and educational, have been made possible by the modern life way. These have become the molders of public opinion, feared or respected according to the measure of integrity revealed in their management. The future of human society is intimately associated with the destinies of these vast enterprises which have inherited, along with physical success, the duty, or more correctly, the privilege of world guardianship. There is every indication that the esoteric tradition will next function through that complex of vast interrelated organisms of production and distribution which now dominates human imagination. While this structure may appear to the superficial minded as heartless and soulless, it is also the largest and most powerful potential instrument for the advancement of mankind ever yet devised. Education, science, and economics are today indivisible. They have already formed a partnership for their mutual advancement. Equipped with knowledge, skill, and the necessary physical resources, this huge combine awaits the destiny for which it was intended. Progress is not bound inevitably to any nation or people. Social and political structures are instruments for the advancement of the great work only to the degree that they keep the faith. If ambition or selfishness breaks the bond, the privilege of guardianship is forfeited. And this does not mean that the project fails. Rather, that which fails the project loses the privilege of leadership. The plan, then, passes to the keeping of other groups and other ages. Man cannot destroy or pervert the works of destiny. He can only divide himself from those works and by so doing cease to share in the essential vitality of progress. Thus it is that unreasonable doubts and fears concerning providence are philosophically unsound. Failure is always regrettable, but principles do not fail, and that which is foreordained perfects itself. Although empires may collapse, great teachers be martyred, schools and systems perish, and enlightened leaders remain unhonored, the substance of the great work remains unchanged and unchangeable. New vehicles appear even as the older ones are betrayed by human selfishness. The eternal commonwealth is an assignment of destiny and spiritual progress symbolized by the fabled phoenix, rises victoriously from the ashes of the human ruin. The adept tradition has always available social instruments waiting to be ensouled with the larger vision. All things created by men are mortal and destructible, but the way destined by heaven is immortal and indestructible. Universal enlightenment and universal fraternity are the natural ends which reward the social struggle. The world and all that inhabits it are moving triumphantly toward peace and security. At any given time, the vision may be obscured, but in the larger dimensions of time, all things work together for the fulfillment of the greater good. Is that a piece of excellent retrospective writing looking back on history? No, ladies and gentlemen, it is not, for this was written by Manly P. Hall in Los Angeles, California, in April of 1951. What he predicted is what is happening, a wedding, a marriage between the corporate world and the state, which is coming. He's talking here about socialism, humanism, the concept that man will become God, and the new religion will change with the needs of man, not man conforming to the laws of God. Manly P. Hall was an adept, a highly degreed. In fact, he was a 33rd degree Freemason, may have held many, many other degrees in the secret societies of Mystery Babylon. He was a priest of the order. Everybody look back in that corner at the far side of the room where it's real dark behind that chair. I'm going to turn on a very, very bright light, and I want you all to watch the cockroaches scatter. For tonight, I'm going to read verbatim to you from a book that we found in a dusty shelf far back in the rear of a used bookstore, that proves beyond any shadow of a doubt that what I've been revealing to you in the segment, the many segments of the series entitled The Mystery Schools on this program, The Hour of the Time, has been not only true, but right on target. And the first time that this information has ever been exposed in its entirety to the people of the world. Now, you had better go to the used bookstores in your cities, and you'd better get there before the cockroaches get there, because I tell you now, they know that we are searching for proof and that we are digging for the evidence that we will use in the future to hang them by their own rope. You need to get there first and buy any and every book that is concerned with any and every secret society, mystery, religion, or cult that you can find. If you don't understand them, and if you don't want to use them to help us expose these people, then send those books to us, because we will put them to the best use. I'm holding in my hand an old, faded, what used to be red, hardbacked, covered book. It's almost orange now because it's faded with age, entitled Fundamental Laws, 68th Convocation. On the front of the cover is some of the symbology of the mystery schools. There is a rope representing the snake eating its own tail, also known as the magic circle. Within this magic circle, there is a triangle, actually three triangles, one within the other. Within the triangles, there is the symbol of the skull and bones. There is the symbol of wings around the world. There's the symbol of the ark, the anchor, and the three letters T-R-Y beneath the three triangles. This is the verbatim written report published in 1916, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm going to read to you from. Fundamental Laws, a report of the 68th Convocation of the Rose Cross Order.
giving a resume of the proceedings of the convocation together with most of the lectures that were delivered during this time of the convocation by the several delegates present. Also a report of the work of ancient initiation in the Grove of Osiris as especially prepared for the occasion. Below that is the symbol of a triangle with three stone steps representing the three degrees of initiation. Up on the top step is a cross, in the center of which is a rose. And beneath the triangle, again, the three letters, T-R-Y. This is copyrighted 1916, published by the Philosophical Publishing Company, Allentown, Pennsylvania, for the members of the Rose Cross Order. On the next page is a roll of honor. One of the names here stands out and almost knocked me over when I saw it, for the name is Lars Hansen. Now, it is not the Lars Hansen that we've discussed on this show, and we're going to look into it to find out if this was his father or grandfather or great-grandfather. Could have been either one of the three. But we will find out, believe me. We know that Lars Hansen's parents were members of the Mystery School, and in particular, the Metternich Stell group, where Lars Hansen was reared. An explanation of the contents of this book, and I'm reading verbatim from the introduction in explanation. In explanation of the contents of this book, it is to be stated that these articles do not give the inner work of the Rose Cross Order, but simply the outer, the public teachings. Now, you'll remember in the Mystery School series, I taught you about the exoteric and the esoteric. What you're going to get in this book, because they never publish the esoteric anywhere, it's always hidden in symbology, but there are incredible admissions in this book that you will hear in the exoteric. Reading again, verbatim. The Illuminati and its soul science work may be called the child of the Rose Cross Order. Years ago it was found that where there was one person who desired to follow the work with heart and soul, in other words, who was willing to live the life as taught by the Order, there were 100 others who desired teachings from the Order, but who were not willing to dedicate their lives to the sublime work. Now, I break from this for a moment to remind you that I have previously stated that the Fraternity of Freemasons, the Ancient Order of the Rose and Cross, the Sovereign and Military Order of the Knights of Malta, the Knights Templars, the Mormon Church, all of these, the Illuminati, the Order, the Skull and Bones, are all the same organization. And what you have just heard is the first admission of that fact. And you are going to hear more as I progress. And remember, I'm reading this right out of their own publication, a hard-bound book published by the Philosophical Society in Allentown, Pennsylvania, specifically for the Rose Cross Order. Continuing. These thousands had to be taken care of, and as a result, the Illuminati and its soul science work was born. When in April, now that's April of 1916, folks, April of 1916, remember that. When in April, the order went forth to the brethren that a sacred convocation was to be held, all delegates were requested to prepare articles on soul science so that regular lecture sessions could be held. The lectures that follow are the result. All these lectures were given in open session and are to be considered as soul science work, though in entire harmony with the teachings of the Rose Cross Order. The work of the Rose Cross Order, as given to its students, can never be published. It is a secret, sacred work between teacher and student. Let me read that again for you. It is a secret, sacred work between teacher and student. It is a soul training, an inner initiation, and such work continues until the student has reached initiation, after which he is called upon to attend a convocation, and at which time the degree work is conferred upon him. But the inner work always precedes the outer work, as the outer work is only a bond binding together the brotherhood. Thus a word in explanation. Many having heard of the great order and its work, and actually knowing nothing of its inner work, have ignorantly or with fraudulent intent established so-called Rose Cross bodies. And these bodies, knowing nothing of the true work of the Rose Cross, have nothing but a ritualistic, initiatory, rite or degree work. We would refer all seekers to authorities on the Rose Cross and on initiation, and they will then find that the true Rose Cross is actually a school of spirituality with a degree ceremonial initiation as the climax. And this is signed by the Hierophant of the Order. In the preface, early in the summer, instructions were received from the hierarchies to call the inner circle of the Rose Cross Order into session, and thus to fitly celebrate the 68th year of the Rose Cross Order in America. Orders were immediately issued to those who have the privilege of attending this convocation, and on June 1, 1916, the convocation was called to order and the preliminary lectures were started. Convocation, all delegates were instructed to prepare and to deliver articles which should have a bearing on the conditions of the present day and which should be the means of helping humanity. However, because of the limited amount of time at the disposal of those who could attend, only a few were enabled to prepare such lectures, with the results that there were not as many lectures delivered as might have been had the delegates had more time at their disposal. But even so, there were from 2 to 3 lectures each day, and most of these lectures will be found in this present volume, though many of the lectures cannot be given in book form, as they were only delivered as from teacher to those of the inner circle. From the beginning of the month until the day of the 13th, there were lectures in the assembly hall, which had been built in 1910 for the express purpose of holding these yearly convocations. But on the 13th, there were no lectures, as all of the day was required for making the preparations necessary in order that the ancient mysteries might be given to the delegates in a form of symbolism consisting of 3 degrees. I can do no better than to give the article prepared by Grace K. Morey of Buffalo, New York, the secretary of the Rose Cross Sacred College for the Buffalo, New York papers, and which appeared in the Buffalo Express, July 16, 1916. This is entitled, Ancient Mysteries of Egypt Given in an Initiation of 3 Degrees. Pay close attention, folks, for what you're going to hear now confirms much of what I have been revealing to you in the series on the Hour of the Time known as the Mystery Schools. Quoting from the book once again, under the authority of the Rose Cross Order founded in America in 1858, prominent delegates of the order were gathered in the most remarkable conclave held during the last 5,000 years. The publication of whose records now opens to the world the connection of Egypt in her ages of true religion, power, and glory with the mystic seal of the United States, whose heraldic symbolism declaring the mighty destiny of America has until now only been known to a limited number. Not anymore. At Beverly Hall, in the beautiful Tohican Valley, about 4 miles from the town of Quakertown, men and women of all ranks of life and from all parts of the world, high masons and members of the Eastern Star, physicians, teachers, authors, and members of all denominations, inclusive of the Hebrew, all these assembled at the call of the Grand Master of the Rose Cross Order for the 68th convocation. And that should silence the cockroaches who are now scurrying from the light, who say that they are not all one order. They are known as the Brotherhood, the Order, the Ancient Order of the Rose and Cross, the Fraternity of Freemasons, and, of course, Those of you who have been listening know the rest. Reading again from the book. Some years ago, R. Swinburne Clymer, author of The Philosophy of Fire, Ancient Mystic Oriental Masonry, The Rosicrucians, Their Teachings, Mysteries of Osiris, Soul Science and Immortality, and over 30 other works, bought a mountainous tract of land, and on this was built, quote, Beverly Hall, unquote. An assembly hall, press rooms and libraries and chemical laboratory, which surrounded by orchards, vineyards and rose gardens, set in terraced lawns, presents with its collie kennels and poultry plants a splendid combination of the beautiful and the practical. To this has been added the mystic, for in a secluded and wooded tract of 50 acres of this land, an artificial lake was made from a mountain stream, a throne room erected and other improvements made which would be needed for the initiation of neophytes in the Egyptian mysteries. The convocation was called to order on June 1st in the Assembly Hall, built over 5 years ago for that purpose, and the delivery of a series of lectures upon practical as well as mystical subjects began and continued until the close of the convocation. The delegates and teachers presented the lectures, which were followed by discussions upon the subjects of eugenics, scientific motherhood, code of ethics for the schools and home, spiritual Christianity, that's a joke, personal hygiene, diet and health, sin, authority and individuality, Jacob's ladder, initiation, reincarnation, soul development, the second coming of the Christ, and the mystic significance of the seal of the United States. In the time of Solomon, as in the time of the Egyptian priesthood, no ceremony was ever held unless the circle of Solomon, commonly called the sacred seal of Solomon, had been previously prepared. But since the fall of Egypt and of the Temple of Solomon, this seal has been practically unknown, except to a limited number of students of ancient religions and mysteries. Folks, the seal of Solomon is not the six-pointed star which is on the flag of Israel. It is not the seal of David or the star of David. It is not the seal of Solomon, as you will soon discover. During the first week in June, in the grove, especially prepared for the dramatization of the ancient mysteries of Osiris, the seal of Solomon, often called the magic circle, was especially built, and on June 11th, the dedication of the magic circle took place in the presence of the delegates of the Rose Cross Order, some of whom were natives of Germany, England, and Russia. This was in accordance with the system as practiced by the ancient priests of Egypt and the Sanhedrin of the Temple of Solomon. On the night of June 13th, the first session of the class, including those of the order taking part in the initiation, assembled in the Grove of Osiris, which was illuminated by electricity from a central powerhouse, especially prepared for the purpose, and the initiation of the ancient mysteries of Egypt in 3 degrees and 6 scenes. All students of the ancient mysteries and religions know that in the Temple of Solomon there were 3 courts. The outer court for the people being composed of 700 selected teachers and leaders. These were members of the first degree, Illuminati called also seekers, travelers, or soldiers. The middle court, or members of the second degree, were 70 in number and were supposed to be in the hall of meditation and acted as mediators between the people and the inner sanctuary. Above all was the inner court, or circle of the 7 priests and the master or high priest, who were the teachers between God and man, mediators between the seen and the unseen. In the Egyptian mysteries, the first court was made up of the royal youth of Egypt, and such students from foreign countries as desired to enter the temple and priesthood, and these during probation were often known as, quote, soldiers of the priesthood, unquote. As it was their duty while undergoing the preliminary training and test to guard the priesthood and its work even to the death. The second class, corresponding to a second degree, were those who had passed this test, and who were in the hall of meditation and purification in preparation for the first vows and the dedication of the body, mind, soul, and spirit to God and the service of mankind. The third class, called the third degree, were those who had passed with credit the tests of the first degree, the purification of the second, as well as the various stages of development required of all students in the halls of meditation. In the royal third degree, which took place in the temple, the neophyte received the final instruction. After this came the final test in the beautiful ceremony of the death of the old life, the giving up of the body and its temptations, and the raising of the slain Osiris, our spiritual body, by his faithful spouse Isis, the soul, with the final illumination. On the 15th of June, the first section of the representatives left Beverly Hall for their respective homes, and the second section began to arrive for the preparatory lectures, and on the 19th of June, the ceremonies were repeated so that all might witness the initiation and take part in it so as to become members. So far as can be learned, either through travel or history, never before since the fall of Egypt and its priesthood and the fall of the Temple of Solomon has there ever been a grove, a lake to represent the Nile, a magic circle, or a temple prepared, nor is it believed that anywhere in the world does there today exist such a circle. Nearest to this, however, is Stonehenge of the Druids of Britain, to which their descendants travel each year at a certain time to greet the sun and renew their vows. This is the first time, therefore, in 5,000 years, that any order has attempted to build up this sacred emblem under the stately oak so that people of modern civilization might witness the beauties of the life and religion of the ancient people whose teachings of individual soul development made the glory of Egypt, the lost dreams of all Israel, the teachings of the Magi of Persia, all that was true in India, the splendid philosophy of Greece, the magnificence of the early Romans, the basis of pre-Christian Ireland's great schools, as well as the familiar Holy Grail legends of Britain, Celt, and Gaul. In this light of brotherhood of man and fatherhood of God was founded this great republic foretold by Virgil, upon whose seal is set the Egyptian pyramid, completed by the white stone of spiritual purification, as the crown of the ages. In the winter, far beneath the snow, lies a seed that with the sun's love becomes the rose. Only those of you who have listened to the full series of broadcasts on the Hour of the Time of the Mystery Schools will understand exactly what that means, and you will know and have an entirely different understanding of that song, which is beautiful, to say the least, but does not convey the message that many of you have always thought you heard. You see, the mystery schools speak to each other in symbology, in a symbolic language that they have learned to use over the millennia to hide their real secrets, their real intent, their real work, which has always been from the beginning to reestablish on this earth an ancient government ruled by a council of wise men, a benevolent despotism, a one-world totalitarian socialist government. Don't ever forget that, folks. If you love being free, the New World Order utopia is not for you, and it certainly is not for me. Continuing now from the book entitled Fundamental Laws, the publication of a report of the 68th Convocation of the Rose Cross Order, during which they admit the existence of the Illuminati, they admit the existence of the Order, they admit the existence of the Brotherhood, they admit that all of these secret organizations, including Freemasonry, are all the same organization, all working toward the same goal. An incredible admission printed in their own publication, a hardbound book found up on a dusty shelf way back in the rear corner of an old used bookstore. Quoting again from the book, the American constellation of 13 stars set in the form of a double triangle was foretold by Merlin of King Arthur's court, and the philosophy of the Holy Grail and of Egypt's glory and Solomon's temple has been the day star of every great American statesman from Washington to Abraham Lincoln. Now, if you've been listening to this program, you know the day star is a reference to Lucifer, the light bringer, the angel of light, the morning star, also known as the son of the morning. After the ceremonies in the grove, there was given in the dining room of Beverly Hall at midnight a feast of the gods at which neither meat nor spices formed part of the menu, but only fruits, nuts, and other products of sun-kissed foods. And that should tell you something about sun-kissed oranges. The conclusion of the rites was held at sunrise in the grove with a musical communion service at which nectar of roses distilled from the 30,000 roses blooming each June upon the lawns at Beverly Hall was served as emblematic of the wine of the soul, and for this service the rose bushes were planted several years ago. This is also from the book, folks. I wish that all the readers of this book might have been present at the preparation, at the building, and at the dedication of this ancient magic circle. Or I wish that I might be able to give a detailed description of these sublime ceremonies in this book. However, I cannot do this here, though I hope that in some future work I will be able to do so. Sufficient be it to say that when the stone, made out of cement by one of the brothers, was nearly finished, the dedication took place, and the emblems placed in the stone itself before it was completed were the American Beauty Rose in full bloom. This as a representation or symbol of the soul that has reached full illumination. The Mystic Ring. This was a solid gold ring belonging to one of the members present, upon which had been engraved the cross and the pentagram. All members of the Magi will know what this symbol stands for. The ring itself, as is known to the Magi, is a protecting agent against all evil or malignant influences when worn during any ceremonial or developing work. And the true magic mirror. This is an emblem of the soul, which when fully developed will act as a mirror to the universe, wherein may be wisdom and truth. Lastly, a complete copy of the private textbook entitled, quote, Ritualistic Occultism, unquote, which contains the ceremonies as made use of by the Magi. And four of these ceremonials were made use of by four of the Magi in the dedication of the magic circle. When all of this had taken place, the stone was completed, and then later in the day the characters were engraved upon the stone by the brother who had completed the stone. Of the midnight feast to the gods, and of the morning services which took place in the grove, it is not lawful for me to speak at this time. But it is my sincere prayer that all who are enrolled in the sacred schools may someday be present with us and witness these sublime ceremonies, especially as they are conferred in the spring of the year. In the spring of the year. Arrangements were made by the delegates present through voluntary contributions to either buy another large grove, or if that is found impracticable, to build a much larger hall in the Grove of Osiris so that advanced ceremonies may be held the coming spring at the 69th convocation of the Rose Cross Order. Now I'm going to reveal something to you that I have never told you before on this program. I've been working up to it, and now is the time to tell you before I read from the next section of this book. For then you will understand what has been happening in the last 50 years and what is happening now. It was Harry Truman, a 33rd degree Freemason, who signed the United Nations Treaty, who pushed through and signed the United Nations Participation Act. It was also Harry Truman, a 33rd degree Freemason, operating in concert with Wild Bill Donovan, the head of the OSS, a member of the Sovereign and Military Order of the Knights of Malta and of the Order of the Knights Templar, who created the National Security Act, pushed it through Congress. Harry Truman signed it. It created the umbrella of national security, a curtain of secrecy. It created the Central Intelligence Agency, and behind this curtain of secrecy, the secret societies have been working to destroy the sovereignty of all nations and bring about a one-world totalitarian socialist government. And folks, all of the bugaboo enemies that you've been afraid of all your life were never enemies at all. For these were deceptions, manipulations. The only enemy, folks, that the people of the world have ever had is right here in this country, down at the corner in your town, in the temple that has no windows. And now, reading again from the book, the report from the 68th Convocation of the Order of the Rose Cross. Introduction to the Great Seal. It is rather a strange and an unknown thing for one to write an introduction to a single chapter appearing in a book, but the conditions are so unusual as to warrant it. More than a year ago, Grace K. Morey, the author of the article, The Great Seal of the United States and Its Mystic Significance, prepared a sketch for a short primer of the Illuminati teachings. And in this sketch, as will be shown by the drawings, it was brought out that man is not only a threefold being, but that he is actually a fourfold being as well. In short, that when he has succeeded in reaching soul illumination, he is the completed pyramid or true triangle. If the student will give serious study to the article on the seal of the United States, he will find that on the reverse side of the seal, which is as yet uncut, there is to be found the pyramid, but with the capstone as yet not placed, and thus he will see that the philosophy of the Illuminati is the absolute and undeniable philosophy upon which these United States are founded, as is clearly indicated by our fourfold philosophy, by the drawings representing our philosophy, and by the drawings of the reverse side of the United States seal. And thus it would appear that the unseen hierarchies which shaped the foundation of the great republic which must some day rule the world are the same hierarchies which gave us the soul science philosophy as taught by the Illuminati. And now you know why what has happened in this country has happened, and you now know why what is happening today is happening, and you now know why on the reverse of the Great Seal of the United States are the words Novus Ordo Cyclorum, which literally translated means the New Order of the Ages, also known, ladies and gentlemen, as the New World Order. But I won't let you rest with that shock. Listen to this, dear listeners. Hold on to your chairs, because the incredible admission that is coming to you right out of the pages of this book is going to knock you flat. Reading again from the book. And thus, it would appear that the unseen hierarchies which shape the foundation of the great republic which must someday rule the world are the same hierarchies which gave us the soul science philosophy as taught by the Illuminati. And now let us look into the future, not far, but just beyond the line. We find that scholars condemn the design of the reverse side of the United States seal, that it has never been cut, but has remained hidden as though it were something to be ashamed of. However, though this appears the truth, it is not the truth. The reason why it has never been cut is because the time is not yet, as the capstone has not yet been set. And what is this capstone? My reader, prepare for a shock. When Atlantis ruled the world, That which is now America was connected with Egypt by what is now Mexico, and in Mexico, in the territory of Yucatan, there is a pyramid in which the fire philosophers worshipped God as divine fire and life in like manner as did the initiates of Egypt, for the two were then one. America is not complete and will not be complete, cannot be complete until Mexico is again part of America as she was in the long ago. And when Mexico is once again a part of the United States, then will the capstone have been set on the pyramid and the reverse side of the United States seal will be cut. Thus you will see that the sole science primer with its drawings is but the beginning of the article concerning the seal of the United States, while the article on body, mind, spirit, and soul is the final thereof. May it not be long until the Holy Pyramid shall be completed, and may it be completed without the shedding of blood. Lovingly given, R. Swinburne Clymer, Beverly Hall, Quakertown, Pennsylvania, July 6, 1916. And now you know the final truth, ladies and gentlemen. Now you know the purpose of the free trade agreements. Now you know the purpose of GATT and NAFTA. Now you know where we're headed. Now you know that the middle class in this country is doomed. Now you know that the New World Order is being brought about by the intelligence community and the secret societies whose headquarters are in the United States of America, just 13 blocks from the White House. Now you know, in the incredible admissions in their own writing in this book published by the Ancient Order of the Rose and Cross, now you know that the Illuminati is real, that Freemasonry is a part of the Illuminati, that the Rose and Cross is a part of the Illuminati, that they are also called the Order, the Brotherhood, that they also consist of the Knights Templars, they also consist of the Knights of Malta, and all of the other secret societies whose organizational structure is in the shape of a pyramid, with a few at the top who really know what the great work and the great plan is, and a whole bunch of slathering idiots thirsting after the secrets on the bottom, who will never, ever know anything. Are the cockroaches scattering? If this broadcast doesn't do it, nothing will. If this doesn't wake you up, ladies and gentlemen, nothing will. If you don't understand now the 18 hours of the series that I've aired on the Mystery Schools, you will never understand it now or in the future. If you don't know where we're headed now, then you never will. If you are not concerned now, then you have already placed the chains upon your ankles and you have already watched freedom fly. If this broadcast does not do it, nothing will. This is the last voice of freedom. This is the only revelatory media source in the world today. The hour of the time is the only outlet for truth left upon this earth. Ladies and gentlemen, what you have heard tonight is the final parting of the curtain. It is the opening of the last door that was to be opened. It is the final understanding of where we have been, where we are at, and where we are going. It is the light. It is the illumination in the darkest corners. You are looking at the forbidden fruit. You have heard tonight what you were never to hear, what has been forbidden for thousands of years. You now know what the great work is. You now know who is bringing it about. You too can find this book if you search hard enough in the incredible admissions that are contained within it. We'll give you the ammunition and the armor to march out here on the battlefield with me and many others who are trying to stop what is coming. Remember what Mr. Swinburne said at the end of his article, and I'll read that to you again. May it not be long until the Holy Pyramid shall be completed, and may it be completed without the shedding of blood. Lovingly given, R. Swinburne, Climber, Beverly Hall, Quakertown, Pennsylvania, July 6, 1916. And I am telling you now, their goal is to destroy all other religions save theirs, destroy all existing nation states save theirs, and shackle the mob, and that is you. Good night, dear listeners, and God bless you. Something is wrong in America, no doubt about it. There's a new religion appearing, many of you call it the New Age religion, and it appears to be the exact opposite of the Old Age religion, meaning the religion of the Jews and the Christians. It's not really that different. I've studied it, I've talked to people who practice it. They claim it's not a religion, but it is. Christ has ceased to become a man, the Son of God, the actual manifestation of God in the flesh on earth, and has become the consciousness, the Christ consciousness. And anyone can be Christ if they have this Christ consciousness in the New Age religion. Now, these are the two religions, the Christian religion and the Jewish religion, that set the United States on its course, because these religions taught that mankind had some basic human rights. They held that the family was the basic unit in all of the world. They believed in the right to private property. They believed in the unalienable, which is defined as being incapable of being surrendered, right to life. They held that each person had the right to worship their God, and they held that all had the right to freedom of association. As shall be so disclosed during this series. These positions were deemed to be self-evident by those who wrote the American Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and became the cornerstones of the American civilization. The term self-evident, folks, means that these human rights were not worthy of debate because they stood on their own simply because they were true. They could not be debated because they were creator endowed by God. Yet, folks, today these cornerstones of American life are no longer self-evident to many. They're being publicly discussed. People and organizations are now debating whether an individual has the basic human rights to life, liberty, and property. There's a great danger in this. Friedrich Wilhelm Nietzsche, a German philosopher and one of the teachers of many of the world's leading communist revolutionaries and international socialists, put the argument quite succinctly in this statement, quote, "I condemn Christianity. I raise against the Christian church the most terrible of all accusations that any accuser uttered. It is to me the highest conceivable corruption," unquote. Remember, the priests, the initiates of the mystery schools, believe that Christianity is a corruption of the mysteries, the worship of Lucifer, represented by the sun, the light, Osiris. Tex Mars, an author who has written in opposition to the New Age, wrote this about their hatred of the Christians. Quote, "The New Age believer is told, you could be a god and the next incident if only those horrible Christians weren't around with their poisonous attitudes, unquote. That thought was illustrated by another of the important New Agers, David Spangler, who wrote this in his book entitled Reflections on the Christ. Quote, we can take all the scriptures and all the teachings and all the tablets and all the laws and all the marshmallows and have a jolly good bonfire and marshmallow roast because that is all they are worth. Unquote. So the New Age, like the Mason, feels that Christianity is the enemy, a force to be countered, not by open debate, but by contempt and ridicule, and as shall be illustrated later, by even murder. And remember, the source of the New Age movement is the Order of the Freemasons. Other parties wish to join the debate. In 1911, the Socialist Party of Great Britain published a pamphlet entitled Socialism and Religion, in which they placed their position about religion into the arena. Quote, it is therefore a profound truth that socialism is the natural enemy of religion. A Christian socialist is in fact an anti-socialist. Christianity is the antithesis of socialism. Unquote. For the socialists, the New Ager, and the Masons have declared war on the Christians. And as in every war, the enemy must be defeated even by bloodshed if necessary. This war has deep roots in history, and I will cover those roots so that you will understand it perfectly where this came from. This war is no different. Bloodshed is anticipated by all parties in the battle. LaBette Lafferty and Bud Hollowell, two New Agers, started the discussion about how their religion sanctions the use of violence against the Christian community. They wrote the following in their book entitled The Eternal Dance. Quote, this is a time of opportunity for those who will take it, apparently meaning the New Agers, the initiates of the mystery religions, socialists. For others, apparently the Christians, if the earth is unsuitable for them, if they will not accept the New Age religion, they will go on to other worlds, unquote, which simply means they will be exterminated. You better listen to me, folks. I am a messenger, and my message is unmistakable, and it had better not fall upon deaf ears, for those deaf ears will be rendered dead in the coming New World Order. Another New Age spokesman, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the guru sought out by the rock and roll group known as the Beatles and others, has been quoted as saying, quote, there has not been and there will not be a place for the unfit. The fit will leave, and if the unfit are not coming along, if they will not accept the New Age religion, there is no place for them. In the age of enlightenment, there is no place for ignorant people. Non-existence of the unfit has been the law of nature, unquote. Another example of New Age thinking on this vital issue came from a pamphlet available in a bookstore selling New Age material. It was published by something called the Guardian Action Publications of New Mexico, and it was entitled Cosmic Countdown. This pamphlet alleged that it had received these thoughts from something called Higher Intelligence, and it directed its attention to the hunger disease problem in the Third World, and the pamphlet simply stated, quote, the world should be forewarned to be on the lookout for diseases which have been suppressed for years, suddenly rearing their ugly heads and decimating populations already on the verge of starvation in the Third World nation. Although these peoples will eventually be replaced by the new root race about to make its appearance in a newly cleansed world, nevertheless, for the moment, this is a tragedy, unquote. You see, they have made incredible admissions, but none of you are looking, none of you are reading, none of you are absorbing. In fact, most of you are so stupid that you think that the only thing you should read is what you personally believe in or agree with. How can you exist in this world ignorant of the opinions and the writings and the thoughts of everyone else, including your enemies? The words reveal an incredible scenario. You see, these people in the Third World nations are going to be entirely replaced by what they call, quote, a new root race, unquote. That eventuality will not be a tragedy. The tragedy is that these people are dying now due to starvation and disease, but when they die later or they're all gone and they're replaced by the new root race, that won't be a tragedy. The concept that a new race of people will inhabit the world in the new age and millennium has been expressed by other believers in the religion Ruth Montgomery previously mentioned, has written about that change. Quote, those who survive the shift will be a different type of people from those in physical form today, freed from strife and hatred, longing to be of service to the whole of mankind. The souls who helped to bring on the chaos of the present century, apparently the Christians and the Jews, will have passed into spirit to retake their attitudes, unquote. To show that the New Agers are talking about the physical death of the enemy, one must only search the writings of other New Agers. Another believer to write on the subject of the destruction of those who will not accept the new religion was Ruth Montgomery. And she has been quoted as saying in a transcribed interview carried by a magazine called Magical Blend, quote, millions will survive and millions won't. Those who won't will go into the spirit state because there is truly no death, end quote. Estimates of the number to perish have been made by some New Agers. One who has made such an estimate is John Randolph Price, who was quoted by Tex Mars in his book about the New Age, and he said that, quote, John Randolph Price was told by his spirit guide that up to 2.5 billion might perish in the coming chaos, unquote. Another estimate of the number required to die because they will not accept the new religion was offered by the so-called Tibetan master, Dwal Kool, who has said in one of his channeling experiences that one-third of all humanity must die by the year 2000. And that would be about 2 billion people, at least. Channeling is one of the strange activities occurring inside the New Age religion. I have witnessed this, and I can tell you most channelers are just fraudulent con artists with taking the money of those who pay to hear this channeling from dead spirits or ancient teachers or other world spirits. Some of the believers claim that they have the ability to call forth the deceased spirit of someone who lived many years before. Quite often, these spirits claim to be the ascended masters, those who have gone on to discover the eternal truths of all creation. One such believer who claimed to be in touch with a master was Alice Bailey, previously mentioned. Her spirit called himself Dwal Kool, and she claimed he spoke through her saying, quote, death is not a disaster to be feared. The work of the destroyer is not really cruel or undesirable. Therefore, there is much destruction permitted by the custodians of the plan, and much evil turned into good, unquote. Now, just what the plan constituted was told to the world by Benjamin Prim, another New Age leader. He placed an advertisement in about 20 newspapers all over the world on April the 25th, 1982, that defined the term. The ad read in part, quote, what is the plan? It includes the installation of a new world government and new world religion under Maitreya, unquote.
But even now, there are those who believe such a figure is about to take his place on the world stage. In 1982, an English painter named Benjamin Creme took out full-page ads in newspapers around the world declaring the Christ is now here. For more than 20 years now, Creme has traveled the world telling all nations that the Christ, whom he calls Maitreya, is about to appear.
Maitreya is standing by, ready to come into the world at any moment.
We caught up with Mr. Creme in August of 2006, as he had just come from speaking to an independent group at the United Nations. He had this to say to America.
It's the duty of the American people to respond to Maitreya and to accept their destiny.
But perhaps the most startling example of the teachings of this new religion came from the pen of Barbara Marx Hubbard, one of their most articulate writers, and she wrote in her book entitled Happy Birthday, Planet Earth, quote, the choice is, do you wish to become a natural Christ, a universal human, or do you wish to die? people will either change or die. That is the choice, unquote. So the people of the world will be given a choice. They will choose to accept the new religion, or they will choose to die. The battle lines are drawn. Choices will have to be made. I have made my choice. What is yours? Some of the leading socialists of the past have shown that they too have chosen a side. One such individual was Adolf Hitler, the head of the German government during World War II, who held no conviction that the murder of over 50 million people during that war was wrong. He considered himself to be an agent of this unseen God in reducing the population of people that he held to be undesirable. He wrote, quote, I have the right to exterminate millions of individuals of inferior races which multiply like vermin, unquote. And he did what he considered acceptable inside his religion. Those who did not believe in his new religion had no choice, and they perished. The evidence that Adolf Hitler was a New Ager will be presented later in this series. Another of the leading spokesmen for the socialist position was George Bernard Shaw, a well-known writer during his day. He wrote a book entitled The Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism, in which he stated, quote, I also made it quite clear that socialism means equality of income or nothing, and under socialism you would not be allowed to be poor. You would be forcibly fed, clothed, lodged, taught, and employed, whether you like it or not, whether you're useful or not, even if it were discovered that you had not the character and industry enough to be worth all this trouble. You might be executed in a kindly manner, but whilst you were permitted to live, you would have to live well, unquote. Socialism is the greatest perversion, deception, and lie that has ever existed on the face of this earth, and has brought nothing but misery, death, poverty to people who have been subjected to its cruelties. The Masonic writer Albert Pike placed the Masonic order into the discussion when he wrote this in his book Morals and Dogma. Quote, It is not true to say that one man, however little, must not be sacrificed to another, however great, to a majority or to all men. That is not only a fallacy, but a most dangerous one. Often one man, and many men, must be sacrificed to the ordinary sense of the term to the interest of the many. The interest and even the life of one man must often be sacrificed to the interest and welfare of his country, unquote. The religious view is that the sacrifice of one life for the interest of the many is murder. And those who believe in the God of the Bible are told not to commit this act. The commandment against this practice is contained in Exodus 20, verse 13 of the Old Testament, and in Matthew 5, verse 21 in the New. And it's simply expressed in these simple words, quote, thou shalt not kill, unquote. The principle is easy to understand. No person has the right to take the life of another. This understanding is nearly worldwide. There are, of course, cultures that have determined that human sacrifice, cannibalism, and murder are acceptable forms of behavior, but these are rare in the history of man. But here we are being exposed to a whole new religious view, one growing daily in size and stature that openly advocates the wholesale slaughter of entire races of people. Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the barbarian branch of the Illuminati, has also endorsed this new conviction that murder was not improper by including it in the initiation ceremony into the order. He has his initiator tell the initiate, quote, Behold our secret. If in order to destroy all Christianity, all religion, we have pretended to have the sole true religion, remember that the end justifies the means, and that the wise ought to take all the means to do good which the wicked take to do evil. End quote. The initiate was told that he may use whatever means, murder included, to achieve the goals of the association that he was joining, and that the major goal of the Illuminati was the destruction of all religion, including Christianity. That meant that if Christians physically stood in the way, they would be removed by simply murdering them. Weishaupt even went so far as to say that anyone anyone not willing to take the life of another was unfit to join the Illuminati. He wrote the following in a letter to a fellow member in 1778, quote, "No man is fit for our order who is not ready to go to every length," unquote. Weishaupt wrote that again, this time using different words, quote, "This can be done in no other way but by secret association, which will by degrees and in silence possess themselves of the government of the states and make use of those means for this purpose which the wicked use for attaining base ends," unquote. Now Weishaupt, folks, was aware of the enormous power of government, and he desired its power for his members. He committed his organization to its infiltration. Then he committed it to unspeakable purposes, anything that would further the goal of the Illuminati. He even went on to grant permission to his members to distort the truth by lying if it would further their goals. He wrote this, quote, "There must not a single purpose ever come in sight that may betray our aims against religion and the state. One must speak sometimes one way and sometimes another, but so as never to contradict ourselves, and so that with respect to our true way of thinking, we may be impenetrable," unquote. And you wonder why politicians continually lie, continually break their promises, and no matter who you elect, Republican or Democrat, it doesn't make any difference. Perhaps a perfect example of an oath that these initiates take somewhere along the road to the pinnacle inside the secret society was given in a book written by George Orwell entitled 1984. Mr. Orwell has an initiate into a secret society called the Brotherhood in his story ask these questions. Quote, "Are you prepared to give your life? Are you prepared to commit murder? Are you prepared to commit acts of sabotage which may cause the death of hundreds of innocent people? Are you prepared to betray your country to foreign powers? Are you prepared to cheat, to forge, to blackmail, to corrupt the minds of children, to distribute habit-forming drugs, to encourage prostitution, to disseminate venereal diseases, to do anything which is likely to cause demoralization and weaken the power of the people? Are you prepared to commit suicide if and when we order you to do so?" This, folks, is an example of the philosophy that the ends justify the means. The initiate should do as he was required as long as the act benefited the brotherhood. There is no morality under such an oath. So murder of the unfit, those unwilling to adopt the new religion, will be acceptable, and those who do the annihilating are to feel no remorse. In the view of the New Age religion, the murderers have served mankind well. But this callous disregard for the right to life of every human on the face of the earth has been predicted before in the New Testament. John was moved to write in John chapter 6, verse 12, quote, "Yea, the time cometh, that whosoever killeth you will think that he doeth God's service," unquote. The New World Order, ladies and gentlemen, will sail in on a sea of blood. Don't forget, folks, Monday, March 15th, 8 p.m. to 11, Lafayette Hotel, 2223 El Cajon Boulevard in San Diego. That's Monday, March 15th. I'll be there from 8 to 11, the Lafayette Hotel, 2223 El Cajon Boulevard, San Diego. I'm going to present a lecture with quite a bit of videotape entitled The Sacrifice King, and prove to you once and for all beyond any shadow of a doubt that John F. Kennedy was not killed by our government, but by the mystery schools, specifically the branch known as the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. You will see the missing frames, the footage of the Zapruder film that the public has never been allowed to see before. You'll see it with your own eyes. You're going to see and hear things that are going to stretch the bounds of credibility, stretch your imagination, but it will all become clear to you. You will have no doubts when you walk out at the end exactly who killed Kennedy and why. Well, let's continue here. The New Age religion, folks, is going to have a worldwide leader, a charismatic political and religious leader that they call Lord Maitreya. At least so far, that's who they call him, or that's what they call him. This individual, as far as I know, is not made his public appearance yet, but the New Agers claim that he is on the earth at the present time. They claim that he came to live at the Asian community in East London, England, in July 1977 by descending from his ancient retreat in the Himalaya Mountains along the border of India and Tibet. They further believe that his imminent emergence into full public views is assured. They also claim that this individual is the one that the Christians call Christ, the Jews call the Messiah, the Buddhists call the Fifth Buddha, the Hindus call Krishna, and the Muslims call the Imam Mahdi. In other words, all of the major religions of the world are awaiting the arrival of this one individual. It is their claim that this one individual living now in London is the one expected by all of these religions. However, when we search London with a fine-tooth comb, we can find no trace of any living individual named Maitreya or fitting this description, or recognized as this religious leader. Isn't that strange? And they say that he is on the earth now, patiently waiting for the appointed time to reveal his existence to the peoples of the world. They say that he will apparently assume the leadership of all of these religions, and when he does, he will create a one-world religion. The New Agers have written that in the esoteric tradition, previously defined as being intended for or understood by only a chosen few as an inner group of disciples or initiates, in other words, the esoteric means hidden. They claim that the word Christ is not the name of an individual, but the name of an office or function within the spiritual hierarchy of masters. They claim that the masters are a group of perfected men who have guided human evolution from behind the scenes for centuries, and they believe that this Lord Maitreya is that Christ. Your Manly P. Hall has written of this individual by identifying him as, quote, the way, the truth, and the life, which coming to every life redeems all who accept it, unquote. Tex Mars has quoted this individual as saying, quote, my army is ready for battle. My masters of wisdom and myself at the head. That battle will be fought for the continuance of man on this earth. Rest assured that my army shall triumph, unquote. Well, it appears that the battle to be fought between the followers of Lord Maitreya and the rest of humanity is still in the future. But at least one of the participants has an army already prepared. How about you? One who claims to have seen the birth in a vision of someone who seems to fulfill the requirements of this Maitreya was astrologer Jean Dixon. Her major claim to being a prophet is her prediction, reportedly made before the event of the assassination of President John Kennedy in 1963. However, her credentials were dealt a serious blow in 1968 when she also prophesied that the Soviet Union would be the first to put a man on the moon. Another of her prophecies was that the Republican Party would be victorious in 1968. And it was with the election of Richard Nixon, a Republican. But she also predicted that within the following decade, 1970 to 1979, the two-party system as we have known it would vanish from the American scene. She further predicted that Richard M. Nixon had excellent vibrations for the good of America and would serve the country well. So you can see that she's a very accurate person, of which to judge the course of the future. If you want to know the truth, folks, I am the most accurate prophet of future events in history. In history. Those who questioned her inability to correctly predict that America, not the Soviet Union, would become the first to place a man on the moon, and that the two-party system has not vanished from the scene, and that President Nixon apparently did not have good vibrations for this nation, and would later be removed from office by the event commonly referred to as Watergate, can only presume that she must have been given inside information about the assassination of President Kennedy, and that would account for her knowing at least in that event, the true future. Secondly, one can only wonder why this non-prophet should be listened to about anything after her appalling record on prophecy But there is reason to believe that she might have been asked to write an account of this vision of the important birth by the New Age religion, because they wanted the official imprimatur of someone commonly referred to as a prophet. In other words, folks, her prophecy might have been written to legitimize his claim to be a man god, so that when this individual made his public appearance himself, the public would marvel at the fact that his birth had fulfilled a prophecy. But in any event, Ruth Montgomery wrote a book about her entitled The Gift of Prophecy, in which she wrote about the very revealing and intriguing vision that Jean Dixon allegedly had. Quote, "The vision, which Jean considers the most significant and soul-stirring of her life, occurred on February the 5th, 1962. She saw the brightest sun she had ever seen." Isn't it funny how that sun always pops into the sky? Now remember that reference to the sun, folks. "Stepping out of the brightness were a pharaoh and Queen Nefertiti. Remember here that these two individuals were Egyptians." And this will become significant later on. In fact, it's already significant if you've been listening to this show. "The couple thrust forth a baby as if offering it to the entire world." And another interpretation, because they sprang from the sun, could be that this is Osiris and Isis and the child is Horus. And that is exactly the esoteric real interpretation, although Jeannie Dixon never said this. Jean looked at the baby and then said, according to the author, quote, "I knew here is the beginning of wisdom," unquote. Remember what I told you? Osiris is the doctrine, Isis is the church, the child Horus is the body of illuminated initiates. So what Ruth Montgomery wrote can be summarized as follows. A sun deity gives the world a child from Egypt who possesses enormous wisdom, and this event allegedly took place on February the 5th, 1962. The interpretation of these symbols have already been discussed and will continue to be discussed during this series, and the significance will be plain to all. Jean then says, quote, "A child born somewhere in the Middle East shortly after..."
History is replete with whispers of secret societies. Accounts of elders or priests who guarded the forbidden knowledge of ancient peoples. Prominent men, meeting in secret, who directed the course of civilization are recorded in the writings of all people. The oldest is the Brotherhood of the Snake, also called the Brotherhood of the Dragon, and it still exists under many different names. The Brotherhood of the Snake is devoted to guarding the secrets of the ages and to the recognition of Lucifer as the one and only true God. If you do not believe in God, Lucifer, or Satan, you must understand that there are great masses of people who do. I do not believe in racism, but millions do, and their beliefs and actions based upon those beliefs will affect me. It is clear that religion has always played a significant role in the course of these organizations. Communication with a higher source, often divine, is a familiar claim in all but a few. The secrets of these groups are thought to be so profound that only a chosen, well-educated few are able to understand and use them. These men use their special knowledge for the benefit of all mankind. At least, that is what they claim. But how are we to know, since their knowledge and actions have been secret? Fortunately, some of it has become public knowledge. Secret societies mirror many facets of ordinary life. There is always an exclusivity of membership, with the resultant importance attached to being or becoming a member. This is found in all human endeavors, even those which are not secret, such as football teams or country clubs. This exclusivity of membership is actually one of the secret society's most powerful weapons. There is the use of signs, passwords, and other tools. These have always performed valuable functions in man's organizations everywhere. the stated reason, almost always different from the real reason for the society's existence, is important. It can be anything, but is usually fraternal and is found in all pressure groups wherever people congregate. The most potent tool of any secret society is the ritual and myth surrounding initiation. These special binding ceremonies have very deep meaning for the participants. Initiation performs several functions which make up the heart and soul of any true secret society. Like boot camp, the initiation into the armed forces, important aspects of human thought that are universally compelling are merged to train and maintain the efforts of a group of people to operate in a certain direction. Initiation bonds the members together in mysticism. Neophytes gain knowledge of a secret, giving them special status. The ancient meaning of neophyte is planted anew or reborn. A higher initiation is, in reality, a promotion inspiring loyalty and the desire to move up to the next rung. The goals of the society are reinforced, causing the initiated to act toward those goals in everyday life. That brings about a change in the political and social action of the member. The change is always in the best interest of the goals of the leaders of the secret society. The leaders are called adepts. This can best be illustrated by the soldier trained to follow orders without thinking. The result is often the wounding or death of the soldier for the realization of the commander's goal, which may or may not be good for the overall community. Initiation is a means of rewarding ambitious men who can be trusted. You will notice that the higher the degree of initiation, the fewer the members who possess the degree. This is not because the other members are not ambitious, but because a process of very careful selection is being conducted. A point is reached where no effort is good enough without a pull up by the higher members. Most members never proceed beyond this point and never learn the real secret purpose of the group. The frozen member from that point on serves only as a part of the political power base, as indeed he has always done. You may have guessed by now that initiation is a way to determine who can and cannot be trusted. A method of deciding exactly who is to become an adept may be decided during initiation by asking the candidate to spit upon the Christian cross. If the candidate refuses, the members congratulate him and tell him, "You have made the right choice, as a true adept would never do such a terrible thing." The newly initiated might find it disconcerting, however, that he or she never advances any higher. If instead the candidate spits upon the cross, he or she has demonstrated a knowledge of one of the mysteries and soon will find him or herself a candidate for the next higher level. The mystery is that religion is but a tool to control the masses. Knowledge or wisdom is their only God, through which man himself will become God. Man's desire to be one of the elect is something that no power on earth has been able to lessen, let alone destroy. It is one of the secrets of secret societies. It is what gives them a political base and lots of clout. Members often vote the same and give each other preference in daily business, legal, and social activities. It is the deepest desire of many to be able to say, "I belong to the elect." The first secret that one must know to even begin to understand the mysteries is that their members believe that there are but few truly mature minds in the world. They believe that those minds belong exclusively to them. The philosophy that follows is the classic secret society view of humanity. When a person of strong intellect is confronted with a problem which calls for the use of reasoning faculties, They keep their poise and attempt to reach a solution by garnering facts bearing upon the question. On the other hand, those who are immature when confronted by the same problem are overwhelmed. While the former may be said to be qualified to solve the mystery of their own destiny, the latter must be led like a bunch of animals and taught in the simplest language. Like sheep, they are totally dependent upon the shepherd. The able intellect is taught the mysteries and the esoteric spiritual truths. The masses are taught the literal, exoteric interpretations. While the masses worship the five senses, the select few observe, recognizing in the gulf between them the symbolic concretions of great abstract truths. The elect are given knowledge of the mysteries and are illumined, and are thus known as the Illuminati, are the illuminated ones, the guardians of the secrets of the ages. Three early secret societies that can be directly connected to a modern descendant are the cults of Roshaniya, Mithras, and their counterpart, the Builders. They have many things in common with the Freemasons of today, as well as with many other branches of the Illuminati. For instance, common to the Brotherhood are the symbolic rebirth into a new life without going through the portal of death during initiation, reference to the lion, and the grip of the lion's paw in the Master Mason's degree. The three degrees, which is the same as the ancient Masonic rites before the many other degrees were added, the ladder of seven rungs, men only, and the all-seeing eye. Of special interest is the powerful society in Afghanistan in ancient times called the Roshaniya, illuminated ones. There are actually references to this mystical cult going back through history to the House of Wisdom at Cairo. The major tenets of this cult were the abolition of private property, the elimination of religion, the elimination of nation-states, the belief that illumination emanated from the Supreme Being who desired a class of perfect men and women to carry out the organization and direction of the world, belief in a plan to reshape the social system of the world by first taking control of individual countries one by one, and the belief that after reaching the fourth degree, one could communicate directly with the unknown supervisors who had imparted knowledge to initiates throughout the ages.